I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all know me, back where the girls all bow.
This is the North Carolina Theater Story Show. I'm your host, Lynn Pryor. James Johnson is our technical director. We're coming to you from a 100-year-old house, former home of the Gilbert Theater, here in historic Haymont in Fayetteville, North Carolina. This is show number 4. Today's guest is Mark Woodard. He's a professional actor and director. Currently, he is in town, in fact, living downstairs on the old stage with the Gilbert, when the Gilbert was here, starting in 94. Comfortable, I hope, Mark.
Absolutely.
But he's directing the last play of our season at the Gilbert, the book club play.
That's correct.
We're going to talk more about this at the end of our time together. So we'll get back to that in a minute. But right now, Mark, we just were listening to that wonderful song written by Cole Porter, Longing to Be on Old Broadway.
Ah, yes.
And I'm just tapping my foot all evening. Now, if you could snap your fingers and be up there on Broadway, what would you be doing?
Well, first, let me say that for me, Broadway has never been my end game. That's never been my dream as an actor. I love it. I can appreciate it. But that was never what got me into the theater. The glitz, the glamour of show business was never the appeal to me, personally. Which is not to say that, I haven't got my own kind of romantic notions of the theater that pulled me in, and dreams as a young man of all the great things that I was going to do. But for me, it was much more about seeking out a company of players, so a much more old-fashioned kind of romanticized idea of the theater. And so that's what I've always sought out. So if I were to be on Broadway, then that's the sort of thing I would want to be doing, which is something that doesn't ever happen on Broadway.
Well, you would be off Broadway.
Well,
doing something.
Maybe off Broadway.
Or off.
But with a group of people. Maybe my ideal situation for going into New York would be to maybe create an original work somewhere, maybe here in Fayetteville or something like that, but a work that's so wonderful that the producers and the folks on Broadway just, they have to bring it there. And so we would come as a group and conquer Broadway together.
That is a brilliant answer, and thousands of our listeners who would agree with you are pleased, I'm sure, to hear what you have to say to that question. Now, you see a red box in front of you, don't you?
Yes.
Mark. And we know you're an excellent actor, a fine director, great theatrical values you just demonstrated with how you answered my question. But there is an object. But the question is, how are you? You can do acting, you can direct, but how are you at improv? I think we're about to find out. So what you're going to do now is, in a moment, you're going to open the lid on that red box, and you're going to find something in there. It could be anything. It could be a coin. It could be a rock. But whatever it is, you take it out, and then you describe it to our listeners very briefly. And then if you could weave a story around that, theatrical if possible, perhaps elements of truth or not. But are you ready?
Sure. Can I describe the box? I have lots of great box stories. No, I'll describe what's in the box.
Do the box. Do the box story.
I'm joking. I have no box stories.
No, well, gosh, you're throwing so many curves here this evening. I'm just and getting nervous, wondering what's going to come next. No, you have to open the box.
Great.
I'm telling you that.
So I'm opening the box now. Oh, wow. wow, this is amazing. Is this what I think it is? Lynn, this, how did you get this? This is absolute, ladies and gentlemen of the podcast world, what I am holding in my hand, and I know you can't see it, so I'm going to describe it to you, is an absolutely stunning music box. I've just opened it. You can hear it.
Beethoven.
Beethoven. Absolutely stunning. So, this box, and I don't know how you came across this. It's probably illegal for you to be having this in your possession. This is a beautiful, stunning music box, which is in the shape of a fortepiano. It's gilded. There's a wonderful engraving of a pair of roses on the top. It's black and gold. It's absolutely stunning. But this is, I believe, or an absolutely amazing and incredible reproduction of a box that was crafted for Beethoven. And it was given to him shortly before he passed away, and crafted by a master craftsman in Berlin, and sent to him. He had it on his mantle, and he passed away, and the box came in the possession of a number of noblemen, and then found its way to America in the early 20th century, and came into the possession of Gloria Vanderbilt. And this box, this very box that I'm holding in my hand, was on the mantle in the music room of the Biltmore estate. But as I recall, and this is where it gets a little suspicious, this box went missing in the late 70s and has mysteriously shown up here tonight.
I plead the fifth. Welcome. Very good. Oh my goodness, that was a great story. And now we want. I want to talk now about the book club play, Mark.
Excellent.
You have been rehearsing here for a couple of weeks. Tell me why. What drew you to this play? Now you told me that you were on stage. You appeared in the stage up there in the mountains.
That's right. I appeared. I acted in the play. Just 2 years ago in Asheville, North Carolina, with a company called North Carolina Stage Company, I performed the role of Will, and it was a huge success. We ended up holding the show over for a week because the audience response was so great to this show. We had lots of book clubs who came together and saw the show, and they really just loved it. And so that was my experience with the show, but I actually have nothing to do with the Gilbert Theater putting it on their season. That was quite a coincidence, because the artistic director of the Gilbert, Robin Parrish, had also performed in the show, a different production of the show in Maine. And so she was familiar with the show, she selected it, sought it out, and got it on the season. It's an unpublished work, so she had to go directly through the playwright's agent to obtain the rights to do it. And I think probably because of my experience and familiarity with it, she invited me to come and direct it.
Well, more than that, you directed the Scottish play last season, which is a huge, huge success. Brilliant. In every way. But I'm so glad that this has all worked out, and we're going to end our 21st season with this hilarious play. It is hilarious. It's a comedy, right?
It's absolutely a comedy. It's a very, very funny and joyous comedy. I like to describe it as joyous. It's a celebration of friendship and food and books, and it's all about, you know, how stories are, you know, whether they're books or whatever they are, they're plays, you know, they draw us together, and we want to experience them together. Yeah. I think about the need of people to create and form book clubs, very much akin to how we as theater people have a need to form theater groups and tell these stories. It's a part of the fabric of our being. Isn't but it's a funny play.
But and tell them about this. It's something to do with a TV crew coming in.
This particular group has been selected to be the focus of a documentary film about book clubs, and so that's where a lot of the comedy comes from. Okay. Is that, you know, things happen that they don't necessarily like being on film. Yeah. They're aware that it's going to be shared with the world, and so things start going awry.
Well, it sounds absolutely hilarious. You have a strong cast.
It's an absolutely wonderful cast. A lot of new faces to the Gilbert Theater, but they're all wonderful. A lot of people in the area would be familiar with Bill Saunders, who's done a lot of work
at
the Temple Theater, and I think a handful of shows at CFRT.
Yeah, right.
But this is his very first show with the Gilbert, which I was very surprised. But Bill is in the show, and he's going to be just terrific, and there's lots of others.
And one New York person.
And one New York person has been brought in, Justin, and he is just terrifically talented. And his character is one who, once he comes on, he's not there in the beginning, but he comes in later, and he injects this whole new energy into the group.
The stranger, that's a plot point that is very common, isn't it?
Yeah.
To have a stranger entering the town or entering the...
Yeah, he completely messes up the group dynamic, which is wonderful for the audience to witness.
So, well, we can't wait to see it. We'll give dates and so on during call board at the end of our time together, Mark. But right now, I'm so pleased to hear that you are now an equity actor. You're part of the Actors Union.
Mm-hmm.
And through the years, we've had a handful of them at the Gilbert. And when Streetcar Named Desire, Amanda is now equity. Can you tell us some highlights about how one becomes a member of the union?
Sure. I've been a member of the Actors Equity Union for about 8 years. I came into it when I was about 32 years old. I had been acting at that point for about 12 years professionally, longer on the amateur circuit. But in my case, I was working with an equity theater, and they were looking to build a resident company of equity actors to help fulfill their equity contracts. And so the artistic director of that theater offered me an equity contract, and I signed, and I paid my dues, and I've been a member ever since. But for other people, there are other paths to becoming a member. You can obtain points by playing smaller roles in equity productions or understudying small roles in equity productions. And through, you get enough points over the course of a few years, then you can enter into the union that way.
Uh-huh. Yes, well, I know some actors have been trying to build those points, and it seems to take forever for them. But anyway, thank you for that, and congratulations on being a member yourself. Now, I'm asking, since we started, I've been asking our guests to share a Shakespearean sonnet.
Excellent.
And I see you're reaching for your iPad.
And you have a tiny iPad.
it's an iPhone.
An iPhone, rather. Okay.
It's my phone.
But iPhone. Yeah. And do you know which number it is?
Yes, it's 38.
Number 38.
How can my muse want subject to invent? while thou dost breathe, that pourest into my verse thine own sweet argument, too excellent for every vulgar paper to rehearse. O, give thyself the thanks, if aught in me worthy perusal stand against thy sight, for who so dumb that cannot write to thee, when thou thyself dost give invention light? Be thou the tenth muse, 10 times more in worth than those old 9 which rhymers invocate, and he that calls on thee, let him bring forth eternal numbers to outlive long date. If my slight muse do please these curious days, the pain be mine, but thine shall be the praise.
Beautiful. Oh, my goodness. Thank you. That's a new one to me. Well, you know what? Before we went on the air, Mark, you were talking about not this play, the book club play, but a recent play that you've been involved with, actors not learning their lines when they're supposed to, and nothing drives a director up the wall sooner than that.
You can't
begin to polish and time goes long, and there you are not being able to do the stuff that you want to do. So, you know, I thought when you talked about that, I thought this is the time for me to offer a prayer to Saint Genesius.
Oh, please.
Saint Genesius is the patron saint of the theater, actors, theater in general. So I've crafted this prayer. And I want us all to bow our heads, even if James would. Dear Saint Genesius, loving patron of the theater and its people, please guide your loyal director, Mark, not to lash out at the actors who are not off book when they're supposed to be, even though he has reminded them over and over. Instead, let him talk calmly of possible replacements with actors who would have been better in the part in the first place. For this and other concerns, be with your humble player, Mark. Amen.
Amen.
Well, I hope that helps.
If that doesn't work, we'll try Dionysus.
Invite me to that party. moving right along. Now, we're going to move now to our quiz, and you were just now looking at my answers.
I saw nothing.
Okay,
I
good.
I saw nothing.
Now, I'm Jay, every week we have a quiz, and I've asked James to keep the tally. Now, if you're successful with our quiz today, Mark, the prize is a fabulous book called Will in the World, How Shakespeare Became Shakespeare.
Good title.
It's just got great reviews, and in fact I bought it recently. I've been skimming it, and I said to myself, how can I bring myself to give this away? But I'm going to. because that's just the nature of this of our show.
But I've got to earn it.
But you have to earn it, yes. So now what I'm going to do is I'm going to give you a playwright's famous playwright's name. Then I'm going to list 4 titles of plays.
Right.
3 of those he has written. One of them is a red herring.
Oh.
You are to guess which one it is, and simply, when you know what it is, say it out, and James will give you a credit for it. Okay, here we go. Arthur Miller. All My Sons, The Crucible, Death of a Salesman, The Vortex.
The Vortex.
Okay, you get 1 point. Very good. Number 2, Tennessee Williams. The Last Trip, The Glass Menagerie, Summer and Smoke, and Camino Rio.
The first one?
The Last Trip.
The Last Trip.
Number 2, oh gosh, you're doing well. All right, number 3, Oscar Wilde, Lady Windermere's Fan, Private Lives, An Ideal Husband, The Importance of Being Earnest.
Private Lives.
Private Lives. My gosh, James, 3 out of 3. I see this book slipping out of my fingers here. Bertolt Brecht, Galileo, The Caucasian Chalk Garden, Psalm of Twilight, Mother Courage.
Mother Courage.
It was Song of Twilight.
Song of Twilight, of course.
Number five.
Who wrote Mother Courage?
Bertolt Brecht.
Right.
Yeah. Okay, number five, William Shakespeare. Hamlet, The Taming of the Shrew, Pericles, Prince of Tyre, and or I'll Leave It to You.
I'll Leave It to You.
Well, that was a hard one. Yeah. Well, okay. I was running out of ideas. All right, number six. Eugene O'Neill, Long Day's Journey into Night, Hands Across the Sea, Anna Christie, The Iceman Cometh.
Anna Christie? No. He wrote Anna Christie?
Yes.
I'm terrible at this game.
No, you're doing all right. Hands Across the Sea. All right. Now, you're going to go way back into the 18th century or early 19th century. Dion Boucicault. One, The Rat Trap. The Corsican Brothers. The Poor of New York. The Octoroon. I'll repeat it if you want.
I'm going with Octoroon.
Wrong. It's The Rat Trap.
Ah!
All right. It's a hard game. Okay. Here is English playwright Joe Orton, Entertaining Mr. Sloan, Present Laughter, Loot, What the Butcher Saw.
What the Butcher Saw.
No. Present Laughter. All right,
Man, this week you're tough.
Well, okay. All right, Harold Pinter, Design for Living, The Birthday Party, The Homecoming, The Room.
The Room.
No. It was Design for Living.
Having your ECRD card taken away.
And finally...
And my theater degree, apparently.
And number 10... John Osborne, Look Back in Anger, The Entertainer, Luther, Tonight at 8:30.
Tonight at 8:30.
Okay, good.
I know Osborne.
All right. Now, it's I'm kind of holding on to the book because there were some missed ones, right, Jim? I'm not going to ask for the number because we don't want to embarrass our guest. But the book is here on the table between us. If you can name the playwright that wrote all of those incorrect answers, I'll give you the book.
All of those,
the ones that were the add-ons, like Private Lives was an add-on.
Noel Coward.
Noel Coward. The book is yours.
Ah! Extra credit.
Yes, extra credit. Oh, good. Well, oh, God. Well, I'm sorry that was so painful.
Thanks for the hint on Noel Coward.
Well, all right. Now, book sharing time. Now, I see that you have brought a book to share.
I have.
And one that got rave reviews when it came out a few years ago. But this theme that we seem to have. Harold Bloom, tell us about Shakespeare.
Sure. The book is Shakespeare, The Invention of the Human. It was a New York Times bestseller. And it kind of occurs to me just now as I'm holding it and I'm talking about it that it's probably a bit of a silly book to recommend, because if you are part of the target audience of this book, you probably already know about it, and you probably already own it. But in case there's anybody out there listening who is a diehard Shakespeare fan and you haven't heard of this book, it's a wonderful reference book that I think every Shakespeare or wannabe Shakespeare scholar should have on their shelf, because it's just a terrific reference book, and it should be used, I should say, in that fashion, as a reference book. It's not a book necessarily that a person would want to read cover to cover. Yeah. It's divided up into chapters essays focusing on each of the plays. And Mr. Bloom, who's a literary critic and professor at Yale, gives his opinion on the play, kind of unfiltered opinion on the play. And what's kind of funny is that he's not a theater guy, this Mr. Bloom. And there are times when he's writing about the plays that he almost speaks with disdain about the theater. he likes to think of it from a very purely literary point of view. And so there are times when I was reading it that I just wanted to yell at him. In one instance, he says that King Lear is, it's incapable for any theater production or any theater company to ever to do King Lear justice. And so, you know, of course that's not going to sit well with me, but he forces me to rethink my preconceived notions about Shakespeare plays. So this came into my possession a couple of years ago, and I went straight for the chapter on Lear because I was working on Lear at the time. Last year, before I directed the Gilbert's Macbeth, of course, I read the chapter on Macbeth, and it really helped me see some things in a new light, because I've done that show multiple times. Last year's production was my fifth time doing Macbeth, and so I needed a way to approach it from a fresh direction, and
that helped.
It totally helped.
I'm going to go in and edit out all mentions of that play.
The Scottish play. Well, I think maybe when you're on the air, when it's going on, anyway, yes.
It's like when you're performing the play. You can say
you have to say it. Well, the book I'm going to share this week is one of my favorite books about acting, Uta Hagen's Challenge for the Actor. This is the book that I've given away as gifts so many times, and most recently to my granddaughter, who's interested in acting up there in Vermont. And she's 16 and already a fine actress, I feel. Mm-hmm. This book is the book to have in your backpack, kids, for discussion of the craft and from A to Z, and all kinds of how to treat your body, how to treat your voice, how to approach parts. It just can't say enough about it. Uta Hagen's A Challenge for the Actor. Her earlier book, Respect for Acting, I love that too. But this one, to me, is the Bible. Now, it's time for me to open the mailbox. And we get mail. And I've been getting some rather almost poison pen things. Mark, I'm sorry to say it. So, coming from abroad, actually. And so I fashioned a brief response that I'm going to share over the air. It's called Lynn's Open Letter to the Philippines.
Almost Philippines every week.
Well, I don't know what it is about the Philippines, but this is my letter to them. To whom it may concern, you know who you are. Some of you call me thin-skinned. I'm not thin-skinned. I'm just sensitive. Sensitive to mean-spirited criticism of our show. I'm asking you, have any of you ever put on a weekly show? I doubt it. Have you ever had to put up with a technician who at this very moment is finishing off a cheeseburger and a big gulp soda? James, I'm calling your mother. This is too much. No, where was I? Well, anyway, keep those complaints, I mean those cards and letters, coming. Sincerely, Lynn. Does anybody know, do we still own the Philippines? I don't know.
We could.
We could very well. Now, the rest of these letters, I'm putting in the kindling box for fire starters for the winter fires here in the Gilbert House. Oh, I'm telling you. Well, anyway. So much for that. Now let's look what's coming next. Well, we have our birthday roster. James Robards was born on this week, 1922.
Terrific actor.
Ralph Richardson, born this week, 1902, one of my all-time favorites. You know, we just closed Streetcar Named Desire. And, no, I'm mistaken. I was thinking of something else. No, he wasn't. I don't think he did that. And then Isadora Duncan was born this week in 1878. Now, okay, this brings us to the call board. And these are when we talk about shows. Now, this is the time to get more practical about the book club play, Mark. What can you say about dates and stuff?
Well, sure, yeah. The book club play opens this Friday, which is
the
29th. Thank you very much. I'm terrible with dates. And it runs for 3 weeks, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday.
Two on Saturday.
Two on Saturday, that's correct.
Are you doing a Saturday matinee?
Yes, yeah. That's what's been happening lately. I'm not performing on Dark on Thursday, but we've always done 12 performances, just about that number. And so we get the four in for 3 weekends. Gives people a chance. And some people say, oh, has that play started? Or the next weekend, oh, I'm going to the beach. Well, the third weekend, there's no reason in the world why you can't come.
That's right.
I frequently have people over for wine and cheese here in the Gilbert Garden for the openings of our plays. And it's going to do the same thing. About 20, 25 people are coming this Friday at 7 for wine and cheese. If I'm getting calls, well, everybody's welcome, but I have to know about it. I may regret this. Anyway, then about 7:45, we caravan down.
Fantastic.
For the opening. So we're certainly looking forward to that tremendously. Now, James, you're in a play at Fayetteville Tech.
Yes, and the Water Engine.
Very briefly, it opens on the...
I believe it's June 18th or 19th. I actually should have come prepared with this knowledge. Well, but it's
mid-June.
Right.
We'll watch for it in all of your advertising and all.
I do have the exact dates for the book club, which will be running May 29th to June 14th. And just call 910-678-7186 to get your tickets.
Oh, thank you.
Thank you for
helping us out there. And so we're all looking forward to the Water
Engine by David Mamet.
So our one of our favorite actors, James Dean, is in it, directed by John Dorner.
Amazing cast: James Dean,
Patty Cusco,
Denver McCullen, Claudia Varga. I always miss her last name.
And it is Varga. Excellent cast. Now, well, what a cast! Mike. In fact, some of those very names are going to be on our show. Patty may be here, or James here, even next week. We're negotiating with them for weeks very, very soon.
Greg King and Paul Wilson. Okay, I'm sorry.
Cast. Then Sweet Tea Shakespeare is opening with Cherry Orchard at the Poe House here in historic Haymont. Opens on the 11th. And runs through the 21st. So we are up awash in good theater, Mark.
Lovely.
When you go back up to the mountains and you can sing our praises, I hope.
I will do so.
Good. Well, that's the call board. Now it's time for me to say, this is Lynn Pryor thanking Mark Woodard so very much and asking James to dim the lights and go to black while I urge you all to find a play to see this week. So until next Thursday, thank you for your company.
For I'm longing for dear old Broadway, longing for dear old town. Yes, I'm longing to stroll on Broadway, watching the world go round. To be back where the boys all